Welcome back to Podzilla 1985 Sports on your PZ85 Podcast Network. Cody Sandusky alongside Tanner Calvert. It is March 19th, 2016, when you'll be hearing this. We're recording it the night of March 18th, so just a heads up when we begin our NCAA bracket discussion a little later. And speaking of that, you hear that? It's the sound of lighters being lit nationwide as their brackets are burning. In case you have missed it at this point, and this is at 6:22 Central Standard Time in Cape Girardeau, Missouri, downtown Cape Girardeau. Middle Tennessee State, the 15 seed in the Midwest, defeated Michigan State 90-81. And for those of you who are like me, picking the Sparties to win the national championship, I hope you didn't place a lot of money on the bracket. I mean, I got $5 in a pool here at the radio station, and that's gone. But, you know, worse things can happen.
Yeah, like somebody who spent roughly $400 on a team that goes out in the first round.
Please, God, don't tell me that's you.
No, it wasn't me.
Oh, thank God. I was about to say, Tanner, no.
I was there.
Oh, you were there.
Yeah, I watched it.
Sweet Moses.
Yeah, I watch these people bid ridiculous numbers on these high-seeded teams, and I love it when they go out early.
Oh.
Don't get me wrong. I had my money on Michigan State.
Yeah.
I did, but
Luck. Yeah. Oh, I mean, we knew something crazy was going to happen. I mean, the 5-12 matchups, we've seen Little Rock knock out Purdue.
And those have been fun games.
Yeah. Yale beat Baylor, which for me has had a special bit of sweetness.
For you, yeah.
Yeah, for in case the listeners don't know, I do broadcast Jackson basketball, which is also my alma mater here in Southeast Missouri. Blake Reynolds, a player who graduated last year, is currently playing for the Yale Bulldogs. And to see that team win, despite the fact I have a best friend, Gabe, who's a huge Princeton fan because he's a Princeton alumni. So anytime anything good happens to Yale, I get a few expletives mixed into a message. But I kind of had to tell him last night, it's like, I know you have beef, but you're a fellow Jackson alumni. You have to acknowledge that this is kind of an awesome thing to have happen, even if it is your most contentious rival. It's just what happens to the beauty of March Madness. You see, the 5-12 matchups are always the one people bank on. And so far, those two were the way they're supposed to. Maryland won against South Dakota State, but they had the Hawaii Rainbow Warriors defeat California 77-66 in a matchup I did pick. So at least that happened, and then Indiana rolled Chattanooga last night. So,
oh yeah,
two of the 5-12s were upsets. Two of them stayed the same. So
Indiana's going to be a tough team to beat in their bracket.
They are.
They legitimately could be the team to put Kentucky out.
And that was the thing. I picked Kentucky in both of my brackets that I have involved with money, but I'm not feeling that high on that pick.
No, at all.
Indiana has looked good coming into this tournament, and actually, speaking of players, it's weird. I'm 3 years in, and I'm actually starting to see a few players I've broadcasted seeing up on the big stage. And OG Anunoby, who is from Jeff City, he is at Indiana. He's a rotation player right now as a freshman. Doing really well for himself as well last night. I think he had 5 or 6 points in it. So
yeah,
that's very interesting and surreal to hear a name you said like a year or two ago being said by national broadcasters and guys you respect. Like, oh, that's kind of nice. It's not me saying it, but it's kind of nice.
That was about like me back in, oh God, I don't know what year it was. What last time North Carolina won the championship?
2009?
Yeah, with Hansborough.
Yep. Yeah.
09. Yeah. You sit there and listen to the most valuable player of the NCAA tournament being a guy you played basketball against.
Yeah. I'm sure that's pretty surreal for you too.
That was.
That's got to be intense. But we are going to go a little bit more into this bracket, which, as we said, is still developing in the first round as we are recording the show tonight. Still a few more games to go and a few that have tipped off in the recent hours, as well as UFC 200 is coming up in a couple months. There's already rumors about matches in the works, and it's a rematch of something we poorly predicted a couple weeks ago. So
I don't want to talk about that again.
Well, I know. We mentioned it last week, and now that you're here, I had to bring it up a little bit.
Hey, I'm glad I missed that conversation.
Oh, well, that's why I made it really brief, because neither of us made it out very well in that
one. Like how I woke up the following morning to a text from Cody saying, Tanner, I don't want to talk about it.
It. We just kind of acknowledged it happened. We acknowledged it's there. That's all there was to it.
That's the beauty of sports predictions. You could be great and be right and come out clean, or you can crash and burn.
You can look really, really wrong.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, that happens more times than not.
Unfortunately, yeah.
Well, I was looking, speaking of the NCAA tournament, Sports Illustrated posted on their Facebook page on their website their predictions from 1998 through 2015 of the Final Four, and for most of the years, they also predicted the championship games. They predicted 3 national title winners, I think, of the years in that span, about 16 years, 17 years.
Yeah.
So
I mean, there's been a few times where it's been just kind of a given.
Yeah. And like Connecticut was a couple years back. That was one of them they got.
Hansborough senior year at North Carolina. Yeah. That was a given.
Louisville, I think they predicted in 13. They didn't predict the right opponent, but they predicted the right championship.
Yeah. God love them. Everybody picked Illinois back in 2000. Was it 2003?
2005.
Was it five?
Well, four or five. And it was a little bit after three. I remember that.
Yeah. Well,
2004, 2004.
Yeah. They picked Illinois that season to just win it all.
Well, Rodney Hood and Darren Williams looked really good. And then
Darren Williams, Luther Head, D. Brown.
Yeah, D. Brown. I said Rodney Hood. I meant Luther Head. That's what I was thinking of. Yeah.
Yeah, and, man, that was a fun team.
That was a fun
guard
heavy team.
Who was the power forward? I cannot remember his name. I remember the center was Augustine.
Mm-hmm. I cannot remember the forward because I'm thinking of the North Carolina roster, which was Rashad McCants. You also had Sean May as the center on that team.
Oh, so and that's the only reason they won that game.
Was Sean May.
I'm still salty over that.
Well, don't worry. He didn't do anything after that. So.
Neither did anybody from Illinois except Darren Williams.
Hey, you know, Luther Head and D. Brown both made NBA rosters.
Luther Head did better than D. Brown. But
well, not everyone can play about 30 days.
He was good in college. The boy could shoot a three like crazy. He was the best shooter on the team.
He just could not adjust.
Make that extra 10 foot or 5 foot.
Yeah, well, you know, that's a make or break for a lot of people.
Yeah.
And now I'm sitting here thinking about that roster. I wasn't even – that was as I was winding down as a North Carolina fan because I just hopped on the bandwagon because my brother was one while I was growing up. But it was nice to see that championship. And then I was like, okay, I've reaped the rewards here. It's time to go elsewhere. My people need me. I've left the planet. Then I went to Tennessee and basically died just like Poochie. So
yeah, good job.
I've reaped the rewards there. I hate myself. Anyway, national championship discussion we're going to get into, UFC 200, as well as the big discussion of the week, I think, on the moral grounds of sports and what that involves. And I think that's where we're going to start with. Adam LaRoche, first baseman designated hitter for the Chicago White Sox. He signed with the team last season. And in case you haven't heard up to this point, he has retired due to the fact that the vice president of operations for the team, Ken Williams, approached him and said that he wanted his now 14-year-old son, Drake LaRoche, to cut his time in the locker room and with the team drastically. Adam LaRoche came over from the Washington Nationals, where he was for 4 years, and it was decently reported that Drake was with the team almost all the time. It was just a thing that the Nationals knew. The White Sox signed him last year with the knowledge that that was an arrangement they made, that Adam LaRoche's son would be with the team the majority of the time.
Was in his contract.
Exactly. It was a decision that he has made personally, and we can get into the merits of that if we need to or whatnot. It was in his contract. You said it was legally bound in the contract. This was what he signed with the team for, was other than a chance to play and get consistent playing time, the opportunity to bring his son with him on, you know, the team activities. Ken Williams approached him and said that he wanted him to drastically cut the time that his son was with the team, and Adam LaRoche decided to retire. This left $13 million on the table, which I know for a professional athlete, that's starting to become a smaller and smaller figure.
Yeah.
But nonetheless, $13 million is a very, very, very high amount of money.
Yeah.
And to be able to step away from that and acknowledge that, hey, I want to spend the time with my son, and if he can't be here, I don't want to be here either. It's very commendable, and I think that's why I'll start with that. You know, that's the background of the story, and that's where I kind of stand on it, Tanner. I think it's a very commendable mindset to take as a father, as a player. You've honored your side of the contract, maybe poorly, and that's a little bit I'll get into. He hit about 207 last season, 12 home runs, career lows for seasons where he played a majority of the time without injury, which was the case last season. But to see that kind of decision-making from a father just to say, hey, I value my time with my son. I value my word and what was in this contract. And if you don't want to honor it, I'm out. I got to respect that on multiple levels.
I do. I personally do. Now, but if you go reading the reports today and looking at the comments made by people reading the report, and you see a mixed vary of people with the hashtag family first.
Mm-hmm.
And then you see the other half where it says, you know, suck it up, put your baseball pants on, and go out there and teach them that you don't walk away from a contract like that. Don't just quit because you didn't get what you want.
It was very divided on Facebook on some of the articles I saw.
I even seen one where they started bashing him because he didn't have anything to do with his daughter, apparently.
I wasn't sure. I know he has another child.
Yeah. He has a daughter, and they were bashing him because, well, we're sitting there talking about how he brings his son to the ballpark every day. How about the fact that he doesn't do anything with his daughter, apparently? No one knows that.
Yeah.
She's probably at the ballpark every day, but she can't be in the clubhouse. She's a girl. She's a woman.
I wouldn't want to. Yeah, his daughter's name is Montana, apparently. Yeah. And that's just a basic Facebook or a Wikipedia search. They list her first, so maybe she's older or maybe she's younger. I don't know. But you bring up a great point. You normally don't. There are people, and that's something I maybe could understand a little bit, was bringing a younger kid into the locker room with professional athletes. Yeah. That's probably not the most family-friendly at times environment, but definitely understood that there hasn't really ever been a history, or at least a reported history, of girls coming in the locker room even with their dads.
No.
Most of the time you hear about, like, Dusty Baker's kid that was on the, you know, even on the field of the 2002 World Series.
Yeah.
You had Mark McGuire's son, Matt McGuire. You had Barry Bonds and Ken Griffey Jr. Yeah.
Yeah. Barry Bonds' kids were at the stadium all the time when he was in his race. And I'm sure he was at the stadium when his dad played.
Exactly. And Ken Griffey Jr. spent a lot of his time with his dad. You know, his dad being a major league player with the team.
Prince Fielder.
Yeah. His dad, Cecil Fielder.
How many videos have we seen of him taking batting practice with the team?
Yeah.
As a 14, 15-year-old.
Yeah, it's not...
This isn't out of the ordinary. Baseball is a family sport. It always has been. It's something where you take your kids out there, especially if you're on the road, if you're gone 8 months out of the year.
Yeah.
Okay, you're gone. You're either in Florida or Arizona, and then you're traveling constantly. And if you get the opportunity where your son and your family can travel with you, and... You wake up in the morning at a visiting ballpark, or you wake up in the morning and you're at home and your son wakes up with you, you take him to the ballpark and he goes out there with you. Well, you're hanging out with your son.
Yeah.
You know, I know a lot of people who would take that advantage if they could.
Yeah.
I mean, it only makes sense. And it, like I talked about earlier, it's helpful on the aspects of here he is, he's 14. He's not just going to be in the way. He's not 6 years old where he's just kind of walking around in everybody's way, tripping people up.
Right, like the 2002 World Series suggestion with Dusty Baker's kid being three.
Yeah. This is a 14-year-old who can go out there, he can play and practice with him. He can shag balls out in the outfield during batting practice. If somebody wants to play catch, if Adam LaRose wants to play catch with his son out there while he's warming up, he can do that.
Yeah, it's not... And there's some of the articles I've pulled up, including a great one from Washington Post that I tweeted at Cody Sandusky, if you can look it up. It's mentioned that his son helps the attendance in everyday matters. Like, his son's not just sitting there killing time, wasting time. He's active in whatever role that he needs to fill in the locker room.
He's in a uniform.
Yeah.
Every day. I'm talking full uniform. And I don't know. I don't understand it. It's just the way it was gone about, like, what this vice president did to cause this to happen. That's my biggest problem with it.
Yeah.
Because... Like we talked about earlier, and I'm sure you got the quotes on there from Adam LaRoche and Chris Sale.
Yeah.
He lied to everybody, to upper management, to the players, to LaRoche. Yeah. He lied. I mean, how can you trust somebody who's also from upper management, who you're supposed to be able to trust and confide in within your organization, if he's going to just bold-faced lie to everybody?
Yeah, that was the big thing about it, and I'm trying to find the specific ones. I had them pulled up, including, like, you almost said it verbatim. We got bold-faced lied to by someone we're supposed to be able to trust. And Chris Sale went on to say that this isn't us rebelling against rules. This is us rebelling against BS. In case you're unfamiliar with the baseball, you know, kind of atmosphere, Chris Sale's the ace pitcher for this team. So he's a very familiar face, very, very quality all-star player. The team was looking to boycott, more or less, or sit out their spring training game yesterday in a statement of protest against the team and upper management. Robin Ventura, former Major League Baseball player, I think that may be a key part of all of this, was able to sway the guys to play the game, but acknowledged that the entire team, including him, were in support of LaRoche. Chris Sale went so far as to have two jerseys, the black and the gray jerseys, hanging in his locker today at spring training, with the gray one being signed by Drake saying, "Chris, thanks for all that you do," or something along those lines.
Yeah.
Signed by the 14-year-old son, Drake. This team was very supportive of Adam LaRoche and his decision. And for a lot of these players, it's because they were around last year. They understood what was happening. I think baseball as a whole, you've seen a lot of players, you've seen a lot of even former players come out and acknowledge that, one, this isn't drastically out of the norm like we acknowledge with former players, and two, that it's appreciated. Bryce Harper, a guy who relatively, you know, he's 24 years old, about to be, you know, 25 in our age range. He doesn't have a kid yet.
No.
And yet he is capable of acknowledging of course, also being a former teammate of Adam LaRoche, so he's been around Drake and Adam, acknowledged that Drake was a very mature young man for his age, very aware of his surroundings, was very helpful in anything you asked him to do, was very cooperative. He wasn't a rebellious kid. He wasn't running around with underwear on his head or anything.
Yeah.
A very calm, cool, collected kid who was mature and understood how a Major League Baseball locker room and dugout worked. He acknowledged that, like you said, this is something that may need to change in the game. They're gone 8 months a year. And he made an indirect quote, I'll be kind of going as best I can, saying that guys miss some of their kids' first steps.
Yeah.
They miss these milestones because they're on the road 8 months a year, and it's sad. He said that he understood and kind of appreciates the fact that Adam LaRoche is willing to do this, not only step away from the game, but also make the effort to have his son involved in his life in such a large manner.
Yeah. And I've seen, I'm going to say this, and I know Shannon's going to give me crap about it eventually. I watch the Buck Commander hunting videos. I'm an avid hunter.
Right.
Which is, it's known.
Yeah.
Everybody knows.
And if it's not, you know now.
Yeah. And Buck Commander is an affiliate and sister company to Duck Commander.
Right.
Of the Robertsons. And
the whole Duck Dynasty television show, in case you're unfamiliar.
And Adam LaRoche is actually a Buck Commander.
Mm-hmm.
He is also an avid hunter and participates in the filming of the DVDs, and they're fun. So I've got, watching these DVDs, I get to see Chipper Jones, Adam LaRoche, several other professional baseball players interact with their kids off the baseball field, you know, in normal everyday life. And you can tell by watching these videos, like he's taking his son Drake hunting with him a couple times in these videos.
Okay.
And you can tell this kid's respectable. Like, I highly doubt that Papa LaRoche is going to let one of his kids be disrespectful, especially in the clubhouse.
Yeah.
So I don't understand what the deal is. For me growing up, when I was ever playing on a baseball team, the coaches always had their kids out there playing with the shagging balls, picking up all the bats and stuff. And
right.
I'm adamant on the whole thing. Like, if your kid comes to the ballpark and he's helping out, oh, well, he's there helping out.
Yeah.
The lying thing where the vice president went and told – so he went and told management, like the president, the owners, everybody.
Including Jerry Reinsdorf, she said, one of the high presidents.
That the players and coaches were complaining about him being in the clubhouse every day. Then he turns around and goes to the players and tells the players that the president, the owners, and the higher-ups were complaining about him being in the clubhouse every day. And then turns around and goes to LaRoche and tells him that everybody was complaining about it.
Yep.
Members of the team, coaching staff, and upper management. That is wrong on so many levels, and this man should lose his job, in my opinion.
It'd be a drastic change for this team because they've been – Ken Williams has been involved with the White Sox for a number of years,
yeah.
But I agree with you in the sense that this was handled about as poorly as you could do it. I don't think there's a lighter way or any better way to say it.
Well, put yourself in the position of a baseball player. You're family oriented. Unfortunately, you're gone eight months at a time.
Yeah.
And you get to bring your kid to the ballpark every once in a while. And you get an offer from the White Sox to go play. Would you want to go with him still as vice president?
No.
Yeah. And
not really.
That's what the White Sox need to think about going ahead from here. No honest player is going to want to come play for the White Sox with the vice president that's going to lie to him.
Yeah. And that was, LaRoche said it in his statement. He released a statement today concerning the matter his first time since he retired. And part of it is, quote, I had to make a decision. Do I choose my teammates and my career or do I choose my family? The decision was easy, but in no way was it a reflection about how I feel about my teammates, my manager, Robin Ventura, general manager, Rick Hahn, or the club's owner, Jerry Reinsdorf.
Yeah.
Obviously, Ken Williams isn't involved in that acknowledgement. He's not a fan of Ken Williams, and I wouldn't say I would be either.
No.
And we've voiced pretty clearly what Chris Sale has said about the whole matter. He is not happy about it at all. I'm trying to pull up the statement from Jerry Reinsdorf, who is not the owner of the team. He acknowledged it today and kind of just wanted the team to let it go for the moment. Not like let go of the situation, but don't address it in the media at the moment. The owner, Jerry Reinsdorf, is slated to meet with the team in the coming days. So upper management's going to find out what happened here, at least they're going to try their best to see. But I agree with you. And you mentioned examples from like childhood. This isn't unusual, like you said, it's a family sport. This has been seen upon all levels of the game, from your T-ball team, if you got older or younger kids, you see coaches do that. High school teams, college teams. I mean, why I blanked on the name for just a minute. Jess Bolin, the manager of now the Burger King Cap Halls in his last season. It's a local semi-pro team that we have in the area. His grandkids, you know, he's been doing this for so long. His grandkids has been involved in doing things like that with the team. It's not a foreign concept to the sport, and I don't get why all of a sudden for this team, or at least for this vice president, it's become a problem. He wants to come out with a statement, and Ken Williams said that it was, he wants to change the atmosphere, and he wants to change the mindset of this team because they underperformed and lost last year. Okay, I get that. This isn't the thing you probably need to attack. You've probably got other things you need to address first, including the players you have on your team, what caused the team to underperform, and what happened. I get Adam LaRoche had a career low batting average and home run figure. That doesn't necessarily reflect on the fact that his son was in the locker room.
Yeah.
Because just as much as his son was in the locker room for this poor year, he was with him for the 4 years before in Washington, which saw some of the better successes of his career. I don't necessarily think that this was a clear mindset for him, but I do think, and you know, I don't know if any other commentators have said that, I'm sure they have, I think, honestly, this was partially a move by Ken Williams to get him off the books.
Trying to force him out of the organization?
At $13 million is what he was due this year. Made 12 last year, $13 million this year. If this just so happened to coincidentally coincide with Adam LaRoche's dip in performance, like if he was to do the same thing this year, 207, 210, like 12 to 15 home runs, that's well underperforming his contract, and I get that. And to get him to retire, step away from the game, to where you don't take a cap hit for that because he's not playing for anybody.
Yeah.
Maybe a conspiracy theory for the day, but I do really think that that may at least play a small part in what Ken Williams did. He's not even the GM, too, which is what makes it a bigger problem.
Yeah, I'm not going to say it's not possible, because it's very possible, but I think it would be dumb on his part. Maybe he was hoping he wouldn't get caught in the lie.
Yeah.
Like maybe he was hoping the team wouldn't show up to support LaRoche the way they did. And the biggest supporter out there is Chris Sale. And that's the biggest name for this right now because it's their ace.
Yeah, he is their face of the franchise right now.
He's one of the best pitchers in the American League right now, and he's come out to support LaRoche more vocally than anybody, so much as just calling him out on Twitter and in interviews. And I think this is going to be the vice president's downfall.
Yeah.
I think Ken Williams is not going to be around much longer.
Yeah, you've pissed off the big dog in your bullpen or in your locker room. You've pissed off the big dog that leads this team and, for all intents and purposes, is the face of the franchise. Something normally gives in this situation, and very rarely do I think a team's going to side with the guy that can be more easily replaced than the best pitcher in the American League.
Oh, yeah.
Just to kind of give you some more thoughts on Ken Williams, just to wrap it up, he said through a statement through the team about Chris Sale's remarks, quote, "While I disagree with Chris's assertions today, I certainly have always appreciated his passion." And then the chairman and owner, Jerry Reinsdorf, said in a statement the club would have no further comment this week, and that he instructed members of the organization to cease talking about the situation. And just one more thing in terms of Chris Sale has been very adamant about saying that if you wanted to change the mindset of the locker room, this was the negative way to do it because now this is a problem. He said that Drake being here wasn't a problem. Adam LaRoche's situation wasn't a problem. You've now made it a problem to where you've now made it a beef within the team. Adam Eaton, who's an outfielder for the team, even openly acknowledged to Bob Nightingale, a sports writer in Chicago, that he wanted to bring his dad to the locker room, wanted to bring his dad to the spring training facility this week. He's canceled that plan after all of this because he feels uneasy about it.
Yeah.
What better way to kill the chemistry in your locker room with your team when some of your leaders, Adam Eaton's been there a couple years himself and has been a good player for them. And from what I understand, I think he's the player representative for the players union from the White Sox.
Oh, that's just great for them.
Ken Williams is going to be in hot water, and I'm with you. Despite his tenure with the team, I don't think there's going to be a good way for him to get himself out of this.
No, I don't think he'll be working in baseball much longer.
Or at least for the White Sox, anyway.
Yeah, I don't see any team that would want to sign him up for anything, honestly. When you break apart a team like that.
Yeah.
Granted, they weren't as together as they should be, but now it's even worse.
Yeah.
You know what? I'm not going to say that. Now it's better because they're kind of come together in this whole situation. When the team came together and wanted to strike against the game and just boycott the game yesterday, or well, Wednesday.
Yeah.
That brought them together.
Yeah, but that's a catch 22 if you ever heard one.
Yeah.
It's like, you've made the team coalesce, and if it leads to success, is that okay? I don't know if I really want it to be okay.
No.
Because it involves screwing over somebody, but welcome to professional sports. Apparently that happens a lot more often than we'd like.
Yeah, I'm hoping something happens to the point where the owner calls and says, look, Drake's welcome in the locker room anytime he wants, and Burroughs comes back. Because I know he has the potential to have a great season.
Yeah, you know the guy's driven like anybody to bounce back.
Yeah, last year was just a down year. Yeah. He could have a phenomenal year. He could have an MVP pace year this coming year. Granted, he's got to go up against some big hitters. Yeah. But he's that style of player where he could have that.
Yeah, he can turn it on. And now, mind you, he's also 36, so retirement wasn't outside of the realm of possibility in the near future anyway.
No.
But this definitely expedited that process in the worst way. This is Podzilla 1985 Sports on your Podzilla 1985 Network. Cody Sandusky, Tanner Calvert here with you. Glad to have you alongside. I'll kind of give my radio break as I tend to do on the air. It's kind of a nice change of pace. So we've discussed our Adam LaRoche thing. We're going to shift gears a little bit to maybe the same level of volatility as we're seeing in that locker room, but a lot more violence involved in the sport.
Yeah.
And that is UFC 200. There are preparations, there are rumors. Yes, we have a couple more to go before we get there, but it's the most directly related to anything we've talked about in the recent past. And it is the fact that sources, and I'm going off the Fox Sports article, sources have confirmed that Conor McGregor and Nate Diaz are nearly done in a deal for a UFC 200 non-title rematch at the welterweight level. This is also said currently to be the main event of UFC 200. Yep.
I don't know. I'm not taking any more bets on it, that's for sure.
Nope. I'll make a prediction, but I'm not going to do anything else with it.
Yeah. I'm excited for it. I'd like to see Conor McGregor get a chance to fight him again, see if he can get that win.
Yeah.
Have they said anything about the women's fight yet?
They have not yet. And mind you, this is on July 9th at the newly built T-Mobile Arena in Las Vegas. So this is going to be a new venue, a new opportunity. They want to put butts in the seats. And what better way to do that than a rematch with the biggest mouth in the UFC right now?
You know, I think they'd almost get more. And I know this was talked about before because originally Ronda Rousey has been slated to come back at 200.
Yeah.
That's been talked about. Like White was adamant about her being back at 200.
Yeah.
Because it's a big show.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's the most historic one. I know it kind of goes without saying since UFC 100.
Yeah.
Which, of course, so long ago involved Brock Lesnar, if that tells you how long ago that's been.
Hey.
Yeah.
I'd like to see Ronda Rousey, Miesha Tate.
Yeah. They would, by the way, July 11th, 2009. Was when UFC 100 happened. So it will almost be 7 years to the day.
Good heavens.
Since UFC. Yeah, I know it doesn't feel nearly like that, but it makes sense in my head.
Yeah.
I'm sure there's going to be a women's bout. There's no doubt about it. The only other rumored bouts currently expected for this card, this is again from Fox Sports, includes former heavyweight champion Cain Velasquez against Travis Brown and Gegard Mousasi versus Derek Brunson. So you have one that could be on the upper. It's going to be the main event card.
Yeah.
And the other one, I don't know, Mousasi versus Brunson. I would assume that might be the first on the main card. It may be a preliminary. I'm not sure where they're going to fall on that. Depends on what's stacked for this.
Yeah, that could go main card or lower card.
Yeah, it could. Now, mind you, this is competing against, and the ones that are coming up, including Cowboy Cerrone versus John Jones, these are all trying to vie to beat what's going to be, or what is, the highest selling pay-per-view in company history, which was the Conor McGregor-Nate Diaz fight. It sold approximately 1.5 million buys on pay-per-view. And that stands as the highest pay-per-view sell rate in UFC history. So both these guys are splitting the pay-per-view profits from it. You know, it's a big deal. And mind you, that's the one thing I'm kind of curious about, because the Conor McGregor fight was initially against Rafael Dos Anjos for the title in another weight class. I'm curious where that line was drawn. I'm sure there's some metrics that UFC itself has about how many of those buys were before that announcement was made that was switching to Nate Diaz and how many were sold after the fact.
Yeah.
But I know given the nature of the product, a lot of people buy it the day of. So I'm sure there's enough interest in that for them to say, okay, a rematch this quickly is not a bad idea.
I agree. I mean, it was a good fight, and it'll probably be another good fight. It's going to pull probably just as many people to watch it.
Oh, I'm sure. Especially if there's Ronda Rousey involvement.
I'll be there.
Maybe it's a little too braggadocious to think 2 million buys. That may be a little too much. I could see this crack 1.6, 1.75 million if you have both a McGregor and a Rousey-involved main event.
If I see that with just a McGregor-Diaz fight, if they can sign Rousey to come back and fight Tate for the belt, done. I could see him pull two.
Yeah. It's going to be tough, but it could happen. Yeah, I don't want to – I'm trying to be some form of realistic, but yeah, 2 million buys – I mean, we're knocking on the door with just, like you said, one of them.
Yeah, and that's pretty realistic. I mean, it's a stretch, but it's realistic. It can happen, and it could, and it probably will if they can get her to fight.
Yeah.
Whether she wants to or not, that's the question. And, God, I hope so.
Yeah, and you know, some of that, I know she just announced on social media this week she's able to bite into an apple.
That's good.
Which was apparently a big thing she was looking forward to in her recovery process, which is great. Now it's seeing how quickly that translates to being in the ring, because... This personally, as someone that hasn't been fought, you know, hasn't been in a fight, who hasn't had his jaw messed up, I don't know how quickly I'd want to re-sign for that once getting the ability to chew a favorite food to return.
Yeah, I don't blame you. The only qualm I have with 200, the way it sits right now, is the same problem I really had with the last one. I don't know how I feel about a main event being a non-championship fight.
Yeah, it's good. It didn't. There are only a few times that's happened in the past. At least it happened more in the past. Like, I would say pre-100 times.
Yeah.
Because you had UFC 48 or 49 with Chemo and Ken Shamrock, and that was not a title fight. So it's not completely unprecedented, but in the recent past, they have focused every effort they had on belts. Because obviously with, is it one or two women's divisions for weights?
And then two. There's a...
Strawweight and featherweight?
Featherweight. I couldn't get that out.
Yeah, and then you have the five or six on the men's side. You know, let's just look this up real quick, because I should probably know these things in preparation for this kind of show. Just talking about how many they've had before to how many they have now, because you have to remember that before, what was it, 2010, 2011, they didn't have the lower weight classes. Because that was World Extreme Cage Fighting, yeah, which they acquired in 2010, 2011. Right now, they have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. They have 10 titles, including the strawweight and bantamweight for women, and then flyweight through heavyweight for men. So, they didn't have that many titles back then. I want to say they only had the five, the heavy, light, middle, welter, and light, maybe featherweight, but that'd probably be the borderline on that. So, you have obviously more options to go with. You can have more title main events. But for something of this weight, this, I think, draw, I wouldn't mind so much having as the main event. Now, mind you, because it's fresh in people's minds, it's the guy who is vying to be the face of your company right now, or at least is braggadocious enough to draw that attention, with two different styles of fighters. Again, we saw Nate Diaz take this to the mat. He took out McGregor by rear naked choke in the second round in their matchup a few weeks ago, versus a guy who lives and dies by the strike.
Yeah.
I think there's enough in there for me to be okay with it not being a title fight to main event this card. And just looking at some of the other title holders, now, I don't want to insult anybody's favorite, so I apologize if I do. You look at the title holders right now, Fabricio Werdum is in heavyweight. Okay. Daniel Cormier is in light heavyweight. Yep.
Yeah.
That draws my attention. I misspoke. I think it's Cormier versus Jones. I was thinking Cowboy Cerrone for some reason. Luke Rockhold at middleweight.
Yeah,
he just beat Chris Weidman for it. Robbie Lawler at welterweight. Like the guy, not the biggest draw in your life. Rafael Dos Anjos in lightweight. If he was ready, yes, because we would see the McGregor fight, that would be where it is. McGregor at featherweight, and then Dominic Cruz at bantamweight, and Demetrius Johnson at flyweight, who are guys that I like to see fight, especially Demetrius Johnson. I love seeing Demetrius Johnson fight. Dude comes out like a bat out of hell.
I don't think I've ever seen him fight.
Oh, I definitely recommend going back and seeing some of his. But... in comparison to, you know, when you look at the guys that carried things in years past, I mean, BJ Penn was probably your lightest guy. Him and GSP were your lightest guys. But you look back, you see Matt Hughes from Southern Illinois. He was a middleweight guy. You saw the Tito Ortiz. You saw the Ken Shamrocks. You saw the Iceman. All those guys were light heavyweight and above. I mean, even with Anderson Silva was a middleweight.
Yeah.
And he went up to light heavyweight. You know, he's bounced back and forth between those two. Vanderlei Silva was a, I want to say he was a middleweight or a light heavyweight. I think
he was light heavyweight.
Light heavyweight. You had your Brock Lesnar's, your Frank Mir's, your Tim Sylvia's.
That's your heavies.
Alistair Overeem's, your, well, not in this company, but your, well, yeah, Mirko Krokop. I was going to say, why the other name, the big heavyweight in the world, is blanking on me right now. No, just it's blanking at me at the moment. The guy who held the heavyweight belt to Strikeforce and all those other companies.
Mm.
Oh, Fedor.
Yeah.
Emelianenko, the guy from Russia, whatever his last name is. Those guys were the bigger guys. Those were, of course, the big bruiser brawler guys that you all picture when you see fighting.
And that's who the draw used to be. It used to be the heavyweight classes. Yeah. They're not quite the draw anymore.
They're not as much the draw anymore, but I think that's kind of my thing in Demetrius Johnson, some of those smaller guys, and your flyweights and your strawweights. They're not going to draw that kind of attention because they just haven't. And it's unfortunate. I would much rather them do that. But I think you still see, you know, to borrow a little bit from our compatriots at Pro Wrestling Unscripted, a lot of people still have that Vince McMahon mindset. You want to see these huge guys, these jacked guys, beat the bedevil out of each other for a belt.
Yeah.
That mindset's still there. Now, mind you, most of the guys in the UFC aren't ripped like that. If you look at some of your guys, there's a little bit of weight around the belly. They're not looking to get real cut in the heavyweight division. They're just looking to be functional.
Yeah.
But, yeah, people still want to see those huge guys beat the bejesus out of each other, and that is successfully done a good deal of the time. So I would love to see a card reigning like that, but I don't think we're going to see it that often.
But it had to be more exciting names to come to those.
Yeah, and I think there will be. And as people become more familiar, because like we said, these titles, like the bantamweight was only first fought for in 2012.
Yeah.
And, you know, these are titles that are, and people that are competing that weren't in the company even, you know, 5-10 years ago. So the boom of the company, this is still fairly young. Mind you, pay-per-views for UFC really only started becoming popular around, what, I would say beginnings, 2004, 2005, 2006.
Yeah, right somewhere around the middle of my high school time. Yeah,
about mine too, about coming into junior high and high school. So it's still a relatively young program, a relatively young sport to have this kind of popularity. So I think as we go 10, 15 years further down the road, maybe hopefully sooner, you're going to see some of these smaller guys headlining. But for the time being, I think middleweights and above are probably going to draw your attention. Or lightweights if you're a guy like Conor McGregor.
Yeah. I still say for me, it's the women's bantamweight. I still enjoy those.
Yeah.
Because there's so many women in that, you know, just they fight so well. They're so entertaining. Misha Tate, Kat Zingano.
Yeah.
Of course, Ronda Rousey. Holly Holm is entertaining to watch.
Right.
For a
boxing champion shows she can do that. So.
Which let me add, I played UFC 2 on the PS4 yesterday.
Yeah.
And Mike Tyson's in it.
Right.
A boxer is in no way, shape, or form should ever go to UFC.
Well, of course not. You know, that was the joke coming into this, that he shouldn't be in this game because it's not his sport.
Well, let me tell you, you hit one punch and they almost die.
Oh.
You land one punch.
Never mind.
Oh, he's a cheat code if you can get close enough.
wasn't that Mike Tyson for most of his boxing career, though?
Yes. But God, his arms.
I mean,
arms
before Buster Douglas, that was what it was.
Yeah, his arms are so short.
Oh yeah,
I picked Tyson just because I wanted to use him for the first time,
right.
And Dalton,
okay,
decided to use Bigfoot Silva.
Understood.
I couldn't get within arm's reach of him.
No.
And so it's just a bad idea.
But I also assume that of course, I haven't played the game. UFC 2 coming out for the current gen consoles this week. How is Mike Tyson's speed compared to a lot of those heavyweights?
Slow. Oh,
really?
So slow, yeah.
And see, I guess I wouldn't expect that because, now, mind you, I guess we do have some guys like a Brock Lesnar being an NCAA wrestling champion. He's got some agility to him. Some of those other guys looked fairly lumbering in years past, but then again, with some of the new guys we have, like our Alistair Overeem, like you said, Bigfoot Silva, some of those guys can move around a little bit, too.
Yeah. The other disappointment, well, happy point for me, disappointing for Ace Hood and Dalton and all them. CM Punk?
Yep.
Total just
push
trash.
Over. Yep.
Oh, it was so bad.
But Shannon did bring up he wanted to put him in career mode, and I would like to see that.
Yeah. I made Ace sit there and watch me tap him out like 3 times.
Oh, that's good heavens, dude. That's cold-blooded.
I don't care.
Look at me in my eyes when I do this. Know that your hero is dead before you.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it was that. I'm going to buy it and make a Jason David Frank character.
Just to beat him up?
Just to beat up CM Punk.
Oh, what was there? There's something on the internet this week. Someone went through the meticulous process of creating Justin Bieber.
Oh.
And beat the junk out of it. I think it may have been Robbie Lawler who they put him up against and just beat the bedevil out of him.
Well, I got to go look that up.
Yeah, it's somewhere. I just saw it passing through on Facebook or some of their suggested stuff, but I love the fact that it exists. Someone's already gone through that process within a week of this game being released and had no other desire than to make this one pop star and beat the crap out of him.
Oh, that's so awesome. I'm going to have to look that up when I get out of here.
That's what technology is for. We've come to a point in society where video game technology allows you to create something realistic enough for you to feel vindicated and beating up. That wasn't the case 5-10 years ago. When I played SmackDown Here Comes the Pain, my character looks like a white guy, which is basically all I aimed for my character being me.
Yeah.
Now I can actually go through the process. You have either the face scanning like you do in 2K16 or like UFC 2. The tools are just so great that you can go through the process. I want my cheekbones this high, this low, whatever.
Do they have face scanning in UFC 2?
I'm not sure. I don't know if they have an app or something like that. I know WWE 2K16 has the app where you can take a picture and they import it.
Like, I know Shannon took a picture of me, and he was going to make a wrestler out of me, but I don't know if he ever actually finished it, but I'd really like to see that.
Yeah, that would be fun. But I think even if you have a camera for the systems, like, of course, the Kinect and the PS camera are for the respective systems, so there may be a way to do that.
Yeah.
I promise, this is a sports podcast, and we go off sometimes. Yeah, it's UFC. It's a video game related to the topic we're talking about.
Yeah.
We connect things. I like that.
Yeah.
This is the beauty of doing podcasts. You don't get to do this on the radio. People start tuning out if you mention video games because, well, you know, if you're listening to sports broadcasting, not always the biggest fan of video games.
Well, generally, if they're listening to a sports podcast, we're good. We're good.
Yeah.
We're safe.
Fingers crossed. Yeah. Fingers crossed. But we are about 42 minutes in. We are getting closer to the end of this episode of PZ85 Sports. And, of course, the white elephant in the room. And, before we get to the white elephant in the room, which is the NCAA tournament, I do want to address quickly, in lieu of Jesse being here. Jesse, I'm sorry, Jesse not being able to join us tonight due to the change in recording schedule. His boy, my boy, Peyton Manning. There was a press conference at Lucas Oil Stadium at the offices of the Colts today. Jim Irsay and Peyton, you know, lots of smiles, lots of handshakes, lots of celebration because, of course, he did retire from the Colts, or retire from the Broncos, excuse me. He retired from football. So now he gets to go back and, you know, all the fun sayings, you know, I'm a Colt for life, and, you know, he's ours, is what Jim Irsay said once or twice. It felt weird seeing him in another team's uniform, but he is the Colts. They're retiring the number 18, and they're putting a statue in front of Lucas Oil Stadium. That's supposed to be coming in the next year or two. Now, mind you, the Indianapolis Star has a big article. Of course, other sports pages do as well. The rendering looks ridiculous. I don't know if you've seen it, Tanner. And I'm going to show it to you real quick. It looks like someone just MS painted a picture of Peyton Manning in front of the stadium.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that's what they did.
Just colored it bronze and put a platform underneath it. It looks terrible for the rendering, but
I like the idea.
Yeah, it's going to be a great idea, and it's not at all surprising that this is happening.
Yeah. Well, he was great on that team. He brought a Super Bowl to him.
Hall of Famer on that team. They can go out and say that. He's going to be.
Oh, yeah. There's no way he's not going to be. I hated that they got rid of him. I was a Colts fan whenever he was there.
Yeah, well, I mean, I get why it happened, and he did too. I mean, I think everyone understood.
Yeah.
You just can't risk your franchise on a guy that has neck surgery and hope for the best. Now, mind you, Peyton had a couple years where he was the best, but where would that put them now?
Well, things have worked out right with two more Super Bowl appearances.
Maybe.
I said if they worked out right.
That'd have been tough, because I don't know if they'd had the money to pull in the defense that Denver had that helped them win this year.
That's the only reason they won this year.
Whatever it takes, man.
Yeah.
Whatever it takes.
But by any means necessary.
Yeah. That's right. Just get me a ring. And, of course, a lot of the people showed back up today for the big celebration. There were, you know, his former teammates, were there. Yeah, he acknowledged that apparently someone asked him if he would run for president. He said no. He hasn't acknowledged, you know, what his future is with front office, ownership, broadcasting, coaching, all of that. Someone asked him what his first Sunday would be like after football. You know, coming up this fall, because he said he's going to watch his brother Eli play more often. He wants to spend a few more Saturdays in Knoxville at Tennessee Volunteer games, which as a volunteer fan makes me happy. And the quote was, you know, what are you going to do or how are you going to feel about it? His quote, I can't tell you the exact answer, but I have a feeling I'll be okay. I did not get shorted football wise in my 25 years going back to high school. I have no regrets because I worked so hard and prepared so hard. You cannot say I was shorted. You can't
argue with that.
Yeah. The guy's put his body out there. Obviously, you know, had his neck fused for the game. and continue to play it for four more seasons or three more seasons. The guy's gotten a life out of this.
Yeah.
More than even, I think, his dad. I think by the time you add up all the years, he may have played either the same amount of time or maybe a couple of years longer than this old man.
Yeah.
And at a level that, of course, Archie Manning being a Hall of Famer, at a level that his dad even couldn't match. Now, mind you, his dad was saddled with some pretty bad New Orleans teams. But fact remains that, you know, a Hall of Famer there, glad to hear it. I know for all of us here on PZ85 Sports that have appeared so far, you're, you know, Tanner, Jesse, we've all been big Peyton Manning fans.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely. I still have my Colts Peyton Manning jersey. I don't know if I can fit it anymore, but I still have it. I'm not going to get rid of it anytime soon.
No. Hey, don't worry. No other Colts going to be putting a name on the back of that jersey, so you're okay.
That makes me feel good.
Yeah, it's a good retirement to have. And I just want to acknowledge that real quick. Not the biggest breaking news on the planet, but
cool acknowledge information.
Yeah, good to know nonetheless for things I'm sure we will continue to discuss coming into this next football season. But now to address the white elephant in the room, or whatever color elephant you want to be in the room.
You get upset. Everybody's getting an upset.
Yeah, yeah. I don't think any of us are happy about it. Looking at the bracket, the NCAA bracket, in case you care or in case you don't, basketball is being played right now in college, you know, college towns or just around the country for the NCAA tournament. It's a big deal in case your office pool or your random cousin who thinks you like sports and know a few things called you to ask you about picks, like may or may not have happened to me this week. It's going on, and the number one seeds have survived so far. And actually, just looking at this, we are recording. It is 6:08 p.m. on Friday, March 18th, 2016. Oregon leads Holy Cross 14-4, about halfway through the first half. And that's to be expected. Holy Cross coming into this with a losing record out of the Patriot League. They actually won their play-in game against Southern by four the other night, so that's, you know, not probably a game is going to be in question. Virginia won 81-45, North Carolina won 83-67, and Kansas won against Austin Peay, the OVC representative, 105-79. So those games have not looked that competitive at times, but man, have some of the others done that.
Well, even right now, the Green Bay Texas A&M game, Texas A&M is only up by four.
Yeah, 35-31 with less than 2 minutes left in the first, and this is,
that's a 3-14 match.
Mm-hmm. And a Green Bay team that I've actually chuckled. I am running the pool at my place of work for the employees, you know, for all of us. And one or two people who are from Wisconsin picked Green Bay to be their champion. I think just more than anything, they don't care about basketball and want to write somebody. The fact that they could even make it out of the first round when I chuckled at that, man, if this is a sign that this year is unexpected, and we say this every year, I know it's college basketball, it's the beauty of this. You put 64 teams in a bracket, something weird's going to happen.
Yeah.
Because it's any given night, one shining moment, you know, all that jazz that we can talk about. But even some of these, while some of them were expected, some of these are coming kind of out of left field. For me specifically, I picked Hawaii. I felt pretty good about that one, especially with the injury to one of California's players, broke his wrist, I think, or at least fractured his wrist. He wasn't going to be able to play. They won by 11. So that was a game I kind of thought was going to happen. So I feel good about that one. I had picked Butler. Not that was really a big upset. Butler's been here before. Texas Tech, not as much. So Little Rock in double overtime, beating Purdue 85-83.
That's the first one that busted me.
I did not see that one coming.
No one did.
Well, no. But you'd be surprised how many people I had at work pick it.
Yeah.
It goes to show, and in case you haven't participated in a basketball bracket challenge before or your local bracket pool, here's the thing. Knowing something about the sport hurts you more in the long term. I hate to say it.
That's exactly what I was going to say. It's usually the people who win these bracket challenges are the ones who absolutely have no idea
just
about any of these teams.
Just throw it to the wall and see what sticks.
Yeah.
And that's how it works. And it makes it fun. That's why I think it's become such a popular thing, is that anyone can grab it. You can write down a name, shoot for the moon, see what happens. Like Jay Billis was on Mike and Mike this morning. Jay Billis, of course, being a Duke player from the early 80s and now college basketball commentator and analyst for ESPN for many years. He acknowledged that, you know, this wasn't the thing when he was playing. No one cared. No one filled in bracket pools. Now, mind you, with the advent of the internet and things like that, and of course, widespread television coverage across a multitude of networks, which we may or may not have discussed previously, about me being mad that TBS is carrying the national championship this year. Anyway, it's, you know, it's proliferated. It's become much more popular because you can see or hear all of these games.
Time out. Go back. TBS is actually carrying the championship game?
Oh, you
game?
Didn't know about this. Yes. TBS is carrying the Final Four.
And not CBS.
Yes. Since they've all partnered up, this is one of the things Turner Networks wanted, a national championship. So TBS, yes, Turner Broadcasting System, the Superstation, as it was formerly known, will be carrying the national championship on April 4th.
I wonder if they realize how many people are not going to be able to watch that game.
I wonder if people realize how much money is going to be spent at bars and sports pubs around the world for that to happen.
Yeah.
Restaurants love it, I'm sure.
Because how many people would try to go wireless on TV? Like, they stick to...
Now, and that's the thing I'm curious about is how this works. Because for... you've been able to, through the NCAA app, there's a March Madness app on, like, iPad and stuff like that. You can go to their website, and they have something called March Madness Live.
Yeah.
Where you can watch games. You can watch the CBS ones for free. The Turner ones, you have to have a cable subscription for. Yeah.
Mm.
And mind you, the Turner ones are their TruTV, TNT, and TBS. I love that we have four channels, so we can literally cover everything.
So there's not one game that is not being televised.
Exactly. Everything is being shown. And that's even a development over the last, you know, 5 or 10 years that they've started to make these partnerships.
Yeah, I remember when TruTV started airing the games itself.
Yeah. And, you know, it's a change, and I like the fact that it's more widely available. I'm not a fan of the fact that it's blocked by just cable subscription. I get it. You got to make your profit somehow, but I'm personally not a fan of it. And that's part of the reason that I'm trying out PlayStation View right now. And a part of it is because they have all the networks so I can watch the games. I did that last night at home. But for work and things like that, Westwood One Sports through the TuneIn Radio app.
That's how I've been listening to all the games.
Yeah, I've been rotating in and out through all of that. And honestly, being someone who broadcasts on the radio, does basketball on the radio, and kind of prefers radio sports a lot of the time, it's heaven for me.
Yeah.
I have no problem with this. But for some people who don't prefer the radio avenue, it's a bit of a jab. And I'm still having beef with it months after knowing this was going to happen.
Like, I was a little upset on the way over today. I wanted to listen to some basketball, and unfortunately, the only ESPN radio channel I get on my phone, or my in my car, is 92.9.
SEMO ESPN, where you hear the Saturday Morning Express every Saturday morning, 9 to 10 a.m.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
And SEMO Baseball was on. I've never been so upset to have to listen to a baseball game.
Well, that was the thing. I was actually driving around, because I got off work at 3, like I normally do on Fridays, and on 92.9, the local FM sports station, was SEMO Baseball, as you said. On the local AM sports station, it was Cape Central Tigers baseball. So there was no coverage of NCAA March Madness. And I had to chuckle. I'm like, it sounds about right that this would happen. Now, of course, you know, I have a few extra gigs of data stored up on my phone. So it was kind of nice to stream a little bit. That's what I did yesterday for the Baylor-Yale game.
Yeah.
Because it wasn't one that was being played. I was like, okay, I'll Bluetooth it in my car and be good to go. And that's how I followed it.
I just kind of rode around yesterday looking for some place where I can get Wi-Fi so I can listen to the games.
Yeah, that's not a bad decision. But, you know, speaking of Yale, of course, we mentioned at the top of the show, 79-75, had to hold on to win, but they upset Baylor, and I think that was the first big domino to fall.
Oh, yeah.
Because in a lot of these 5-12 matchups, normally we've seen in years past, you know, the fives aren't necessarily expected to go too terrible far. Like in the case of Maryland beating South Dakota State, if Maryland beats Hawaii, which is a big if for me, they're going to get steamrolled by Kansas. On the North Carolina side, Indiana or Kentucky could beat them. So that's a different situation. But I don't think Chattanooga would have been able to do that, or Stony Brook, if they had beaten Kentucky. You look at Little Rock faces Iowa State. That's a little more feasible. And that's the one maybe of all of these, maybe Yale, where this is going to get interesting. Because on the bottom side of the bracket where the 12s have won, especially now that Baylor's out of it because Yale beat them, if they get past Duke, who they played earlier this season but lost to by around 20, they face Oregon and the winner of St. Joe's Cincinnati, whomever, you know, the winner of those two games that play tomorrow. That's an interesting matchup, although Oregon is looking a lot better as a number one coming in this tournament than I thought. Mind you, current score 23-11. On the Virginia side, they're a team that's done this before, so I don't quite know if Little Rock has a chance, but this has been such an undefined season in terms of everyone's been shifting so back and forth. This could be a George Mason VCU previously Wichita State situation.
Don't tease me, Cody.
What, seeing a 12 make it all the way through?
Oh, man, I love that. That George Mason year?
Oh, yeah.
Oh.
2011? I want to say it was, because I know Wichita State was 2013.
Yeah, and even the Wichita State season. Yeah.
Or the two Butler years.
Wichita State could be right there again.
Yeah.
I think, are they playing right now?
No, they've played already.
They won.
Yeah, they play Miami tomorrow.
And, you know, when I seen that Wichita State won that that play-in game, I went and changed my brackets. Wichita State.
Yep.
Just because I have 100% faith in them whenever it comes to the tournament.
Well, Gary Marshall, that team has, you know, you talk about experience this time of year, he has it and this team has it.
Yeah.
So you listed the pregame last night, Wichita State beat Arizona 65-55. He acknowledged in the locker room before they went out on the court, we don't have to be the best team. We just have to get by. We have to play well enough. We have to play a good game. We don't have to play a perfect game, and we're going to move on. And if anyone to have a voice of experience for that, it's him.
Yeah, and that's the great thing about college basketball, that any team can win on any given night.
Yeah.
As long as they have the pieces. You know, if they mesh well that night and all of a sudden start hitting all their shots, hitting all their free throws, making the right pass, and, you know, that's when they win. That's when you see these teams like Wichita come up and beat Arizona. That's when you see, like right now, Pittsburgh, number 10, is beating 7 Wisconsin.
Yeah. Or you even look, I mean, just look at the Midwest bracket. If things pan out, you could see a 15-11 matchup in Middle Tennessee State versus Gonzaga, respectively. Or you could see a 10-11 between Syracuse and Gonzaga.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the thing about this time of year. And I know a lot of us, myself included, love college football because of that parity in most of it. The top has been a little bit stuck the last couple years. But even with it, it's only 4 teams. There's only so much you can have in that.
I think I heard bitterness towards Alabama.
Don't see that name around me. Gosh. Anyway. I won't grumble on in expletives about Alabama. Just know that I hate them, as I've made mention of very clearly in the past on the show and many others. But, you know, as I said, you only have, what, 12 weeks to make that happen?
Yeah.
And then at that point, you're kind of stuck in your bowl game to where, yeah, you may have a mismatch, but it's not as pronounced as this. And it's while a lot of people, and I know maybe people in this region, there's a stark divide between those who love basketball and those who don't. I think it's a very love-hate sport, especially in this area.
Yeah.
Those who love it are diehard. Those who hate it don't care to see any of it. This is, I think it's just a microcosm of sports. This, and I'm not, you know, we're not the first people to say this by a long shot. You can see anything happen. This is where everything about sports comes in. You see the kids who, like Yale, they don't have athletic scholarships. Ivy League doesn't allow it. They are there based upon being recruited, of course, but it's all demonstrated need. They get scholarships and reimbursement money, whatever money I'm trying to think about, loan money, things like that, based upon their need.
Yeah.
They're not determined by athletic scholarships. You see teams like Holy Cross, teams with a losing record, get on a run, win their conference, win the play-in game, and make their way into this. Those things don't happen in a lot of other sports. And for a lot of us, especially those of us like myself who follow sports almost religiously but have no athletic capability to actually play them, this is what you like to see yourself in the situation. You kind of associate. You can relate with these guys that, yeah, they got to bum around on bad buses and they got to fight their way to get into this tournament and face a bunch of kids who are going to go on to the NBA. But they can win.
Yeah.
And move on past those talents. And it's just, it's a reason why I love sports or stories like this. And this tournament every year, it gives you that opportunity to see it on display over and over again.
Yeah, college basketball, the tournament's always been a blast for me. As much as I want to win a bracket challenge, I always fill it out as a sports fan, someone who studies and this stuff.
Yeah.
And I know I'm going to lose. I'm just waiting on the one year where I get really lucky and it happens, because I cannot bring myself to make those crazy predictions for the upsets. I know I should probably just pick one bracket challenge and do it separately.
I've won one.
Really?
A year I didn't have money on it because I wasn't able to at the time. Oh, I'm trying to remember. It was the second Florida championship, if I remember right.
Yeah.
The one where they beat UCLA.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. That one I picked well. And it was in competition with a good friend of mine, my old youth pastor. He runs a big one. I actually didn't participate this year as I didn't feel very good about this bracket. And I feel very okay about that. He kind of put mine in the mix of things, not with the paid ones, but I won that year. So I was the head of that. But of course, I didn't put money in and wasn't allowed to win it, so whatever. Not even close since then.
Yeah.
And with Purdue, Michigan State, and Baylor all being knocked out, those were three of my Elite Eight teams, or somewhere around that window. Yeah. Yeah, it's not a good year for Cody. The $5 I've put into a pool is not going to be coming back my way.
Yeah, I'm in a company pool. Where I work, and I picked Yale to win.
There you go.
And I am one of two people that did that. The only reason one of them picked Yale is because he's a graduate of Yale.
Got to support your guys.
I guess.
And that's my thing. People get on to me. It's like, you know, you could have supported your former, your fellow alumni. You're right. I probably should have. But I didn't because I kind of had Baylor going further.
Yeah.
But that's what happens. I told someone this yesterday. This is the least upset I could be. about not winning a bracket challenge.
Oh, yeah, because it's been such a great tournament so far.
Yeah, I have been, I am so happy as to not be winning any money out of this.
Like, if a dream that could come true, I didn't pick it, but, oh, if it happens, I would be just over the moon if Yale beats Duke.
Yeah.
Oh.
Well, there's an article, and we'll wrap this up as we are at an hour. There's a, go to salon.com. I wish I had the URL to share. I'll try to find it and put it at Cody Sandusky on Twitter. It's an article basically saying, you know, the underdog Yale, you know, those really repressed Yale Bulldogs going against the Duke Blue Devils, basically acknowledging that if a meteor hit that stadium, the sports world wouldn't care. They're the two bad guys playing against each other, and unfortunately, basketball does not allow both teams to lose.
Yeah, unfortunately.
Yeah, so a lot of people on the East Coast very miffed that this is a thing they have to watch.
I mean, I'm not upset.
Yeah, I'm okay.
Yeah, it's... I hate Duke with a passion.
Right.
So, it's the lesser two evils.
Yeah. Although I love Coach K.
Yeah, I'm not going to...
I respect that kind of Coach K.
I can't argue that.
Yeah, but no, my former allegiances with North Carolina still withstand any love of Duke because I don't have any for them.
Duke is equivalent to me with, like, it's on par with my hate for the Yankees.
That's exactly where I thought you were going to go. That's what I was going to say. It's the equivalent of the Yankees in college basketball.
Yeah. They're the three teams I can think of that get on my nerves like that. It's the Yankees, the Duke Blue Devils, and the Lakers.
I can see that. Definitely see that. From our ode to college basketball and loving it to our ode of teams we hate.
Yeah.
And we hit them all within a very short span of time.
Yeah.
Well.
They're all there.
Unfortunately. But that is all for this week's episode of Podzilla 1985 Sports. Tanner, as always, glad to have you in. Thanks for joining along for the ride.
Thanks for having me.
And otherwise, you can go to Podzilla1985.com to find the cast and crew page. You can find our Twitter handles, Tanner's and myself, in our bio section. You can also go to Podzilla1985.com to catch all of our podcasts from our Tanner Thursday special edition this week for Harry Potter.
Yeah.
Pro Wrestling Unscripted, the Mr. 100 Five-Star Man presents Tanner Calvert and Lindsay Wolfgang this week. A very fun sitcom episode that I enjoyed.
That was fun.
You can also subscribe on iTunes. You can go to patreon.com, search Podzilla 1985. You'll be able to find the way to support this podcast and all the others on the PZ85 network, as well as redbubble.com. You can search Podzilla 1985. You can find all the apparel, get stuff printed on mugs, on notebooks. We have plenty of options for you to support the podcast, which, as always, we greatly appreciate.
Yeah. Somebody go buy that Tanner Thursday shirt. I just want to see it in person.
I've really been thinking about it.
Yeah?
I've been looking. I was like, if I'm going to buy one, that just seems like the one to wear.
I'm either going to... I don't want to buy the t-shirt because they don't have a size fit me, but I'll probably end up buying the stationery, the notebook.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just got to carry that around.
Yeah.
It's not a bad idea, but multiple ways to support. We appreciate your support as always, and we want to say thank you for tuning in to Podzilla 1985 Sports for this week. Stick around, same bat time, same bat channel next time around, next Saturday, for more Podzilla 1985 Sports. Tanner, take us out.
Oh, don't put me on the spot like that.
Fine. Strike up your lighters, kids. Your brackets are burning.